This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Please listen to verse 255 of chapter Baqarah, recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahu la ilaha illa huwa القيوم لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم له ما في السماوات وما من ذا الذي يشفع عنده إلا بإذنه لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم له ما في السماوات والأرض من ذا الذي يشفع عنده إلا بإذنه يعلم ما بين أيديه ولا يحيطون بشيء من علمه إلا بما شاء وسع كرسيه السماوات والأرض ولا وهو العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Allah is He, besides whom there is no God, the ever-living, the self-subsisting, by whom all subsist. Slumber does not overtake Him, nor sleep. Whatever is in the heavens, and whatever is in the earth, is His. Who is He that can intercede with Him, but by His permission? He knows what is before them and what is behind them, and they cannot comprehend anything out of His knowledge except what He pleases. His knowledge extends over the heavens and the earth, and the preservation of them both tires Him not, and He is the Most High, the Great.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Our top stories: people around the world mark International Quds Day in support of the Palestinian cause against the Israeli occupation. Major European countries have called on Israel to halt its settlements construction in the occupied West Bank. And India reports a record daily rise in coronavirus cases, more than 414,000, as nearly 4,000 more people die of the pandemic. Welcome to the program. People across the world mark International Quds Day, which falls on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. The occasion is marked in solidarity with the Palestinian nation. People across the world hold rallies to denounce Israel's occupation of Palestinian land. They also denounce Israeli atrocities against the Palestinian people in the occupied territories, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip. Political and religious leaders shed light on the Palestinian cause and urge Muslim unity against Israel. This year, however, things are different. Quds rallies have been canceled in many countries, including over here in Iran, due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The International Quds Day is an annual event held across the world on the last Friday of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan to show solidarity with the Palestinians and denounce the occupying and usurping Israeli regime. Every year on this day, people from all walks of life hit the streets chanting slogans and carrying banners to call for the freedom of Palestine. The Quds Day rally turned into a global event in 1979 with a call from the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, late Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. Ayatollah Khomeini declared the last Friday of the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan each year as Quds Day, in which Muslims worldwide would unite in solidarity with the Palestinian cause. Ayatollah Khomeini declared the liberation of Jerusalem al-Quds a religious duty to all Muslims. Quds Day has actually become a day for protesters across the world, especially Muslim and Arab countries, to slam Israel's occupation of Palestine and its oppression of the Palestinians. During the First Intifada in January 1988, the Jerusalem Committee of the Organization of the Islamic Conference decided that Quds Day should be commemorated in public events throughout the Arab world. Today, this event is not limited to West Asia, the wider Arab world, or predominantly Muslim countries alone. But Quds Day protests are held in the United Kingdom, Germany, Canada, Sweden, France, the United States, and many Asian, Latin American, and African nations, attended by both Muslim and non-Muslim communities. In fact, Quds Day rallies are now not just to call for the liberation of Palestine and denounce Israeli atrocities, but the legacy of the late founder of the Islamic Republic has turned into a global movement against aggressors and the solidarity with those under tyranny. Many call it a day when the oppressed should become equipped against the oppressors.
We'll be discussing this issue a little bit further with guests who join us for this part of the program. And Mona Candel, of course, one of them, our correspondent, who has traveled for us, I believe, to Calandia or the other way around. I'm pretty sure that it should be the other way around. If you're in Calandia, talk to me about what you see over there. And later on, before you start, let me just introduce Professor Saad Nemer as well. He's a professor of political scientist with Birzeit University. He is coming to you live from Ramallah. Mona Candel in Calandia, tell us what you see there on International Quds Day.
That's right. We are right now at the Calandia military checkpoint. It's to the south of occupied Ramallah, northern Jerusalem, Al-Quds. It's supposed the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan and International Quds Day. On the last on Fridays during the last years, it was supposed to witness thousands and sometimes hundreds of Palestinians coming from across the occupied West Bank to enter Jerusalem Al-Quds in order to perform the prayers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. However, this year the situation is completely different. Usually, Israeli forces and the Israeli authorities require Israeli-issued permits, special permits for the Palestinians, in order to be able to enter Jerusalem Al-Quds. This time, in addition to the Israeli-issued permits, the Israeli authorities also stipulated that anyone who wants to enter to Jerusalem Al-Quds from the occupied West Bank must have gotten the vaccine for the COVID-19. Palestinians, even with the spread of the coronavirus and the strict measures, they try to reach Calandia military checkpoint in order to enter Jerusalem Al-Quds. However, they were surprised by these strict measures and they were ordered to leave only a few hundreds, maybe, from all across the occupied West Bank who were allowed to enter Jerusalem Al-Quds today. There are also reports that the Israeli authorities would be trying to prevent people from reaching the Al-Aqsa Mosque and Jerusalem Al-Quds in order to prevent any form of clashes, especially with the issue of what's going on in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and the evacuation of the Palestinian homes there. The Israelis are trying to prevent any clashes between the settlers and the Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah. Because last night clashes renewed there with the settlers attacking the Palestinians, refused any compromise and any deal with the Israeli settlers. They insist that they have their right to remain on their land and to stay in their homes in Sheikh Jarrah. So the Israelis don't want for Palestinians from the occupied West Bank to be in Jerusalem Al-Quds on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan to prevent any form of clashes.
Okay, thank you very much. That's Mona Candel. Please stay with us, Mona. I'm going to get back to you for another question, perhaps, you know, if we have the time. But for now, Professor Saad Nemer, it's International Quds Day. You are in Ramallah yourself. What do you think about, you know, the importance that this day holds in the eyes of of Palestinians, including yourself, Professor, and, you know, how it has contributed perhaps to the spirit of resistance against the, you know, what the Israelis basically have done over the years to the Palestinians?
As a matter of fact, the Jerusalem issue is a very important issue to the Palestinians. And since 1979, when late Ayatollah Khomeini declared that day to be the day of Al-Quds, and this day is being escalated every year, and more people are joining all over the world, not only in Iran or Arab countries, but also around the world. That give us, you know, a huge boost for the Palestinians, especially in the occupied territories. We are seeing now Jerusalem being Jewedized by the Israelis, and they are taking over the holy sites and everywhere in Jerusalem. Because of that, we need the support of the international community. We need the support of all Muslims. By the end of the day, we are, as Palestinians, defending Jerusalem. We are there. We are. It's our duty to defend our city and our holy sites. But at the same time, we know that this holy sites belongs not only to the Palestinians, but to the whole Muslims all over the world. And we believe that the Muslims who are in solidarity with the Palestinians today in Jerusalem Day, definitely that will give us a good boost in, even in Jerusalem or in the West Bank, against the settlers and against the Israeli atrocities against the city and the Jewedizing of the city. What we are seeing today, it's a very dangerous period of time for Jerusalem, especially in the last few years, and after Trump admitted or recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, the Israelis are out of their mind in trying to Jewedize the city in so many different ways. The latest is the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, where 28 houses is going to be evacuated and to be demolished to build a new settlement there. More than 500 people who are living in these 28 houses. This is absolutely outrageous. The whole idea for the Israeli came after the failure of the 2000 Camp David negotiations between late Yasser Arafat and the Israelis over the issue of Jerusalem. And the Israeli realized that the overwhelming majority of the Palestinians who are living in Jerusalem, and they needed to change the demography of Jerusalem. So they came out with the program called 2020. That means that by the year 2020, they should have changed the demography of the city. And ever since 2000 till today, they are trying to do it in so many different ways, but they didn't succeed, as a matter of fact, in evacuating all the Palestinians. What we are witnessing now is a real ethnic cleansing of Jerusalem, where the settlers are taking over the houses of the Palestinians, kicking them out, using not only all the apparatus of the Israeli government apparatus, but also the courts, which are siding beside the settlers and ruling for their sake to get the houses of the Palestinians and kicking them out. This is, with no doubt, an ethnic cleansing case, which is a war crime against the humanity. What we are now asking the whole international community and the Muslims all over the world in this day, Jerusalem Day, Al-Quds Day, to stand by the Palestinians and to apply all kind of pressure as an international community against Israel to stop all these atrocities against the Palestinians and to stop the violations and the measures taken in Jerusalem, and to help the Palestinians in their battle against this Jewedization of Jerusalem. All the powers of the people, all the support we can get to help us as Palestinians in doing so. The Palestinians in Jerusalem are doing their best. And last night, there were an attack in Sheikh Jarrah by the settlers against the people who are taking their iftar after the Maghrib prayer. And the Palestinians started also to fight back, and they defeated these settlers who tried to attack them. But this is on a daily basis. We need help, and we need also a big stand by the international community, by the Muslim community all over the world, to support the Palestinians in their battle in Jerusalem.
Understandably, Professor, thank you for that comprehensive answer. And, of course, I also spoke to Mona Kandil, our correspondent, in Qalandia, and Professor Saad Nemr in Ramallah. I really appreciate the time that both of you gave us. I don't think I have any time to ask another question from either of you. Thank you very much, and let's just move on to another story. You have a good day. Major European countries have called on Israel to halt its settlement construction in the occupied West Bank. In a joint statement, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and Britain urged Tel Aviv to reverse its decision to build 540 settler units in the Har Homa area. The statement says construction of settlements in the area between East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and Bethlehem will further damage the prospects for a viable Palestinian state. Palestinian presidential office has welcomed the European reaction and called for continued pressure on Israel to stop its settlements construction. People in the Gaza Strip have held a rally to protest Israel's aggression against Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in Jerusalem Al-Quds, where dozens of them have been forced to leave their homes. Ruba Shabbat is in Gaza.
The Palestinian National and Islamic Forces Committee in the Gaza Strip held a protest to support Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem Al-Quds, where dozens of Palestinians are illegally displaced from their homes by force. In a press conference held during the protest, Palestinian leaders called on the international community to end this eviction that aims to demolish the Palestinian cause.
The apartheid policies and the displacement of Palestinians from their land is totally rejected by Palestinians. We stress that we won't allow the Nakba and the land grabbing that happened in 1978 to be repeated again. We are calling on the international community to stop these violations. We also call on all Palestinians to get united in order to end all Israeli conspiracies against Palestine.
Palestinian resistance in the Gaza Strip expressed solidarity with people in Sheikh Jarrah and held the Israeli regime responsible for the consequences of this move. In a recent statement by Hamas military wing, its leader Mohammed Daif warned that Israel will pay a heavy price if attacks against Sheikh Jarrah continue.
The message of the Palestinian resistance to the Israeli regime for these violations against our people is clear. Jerusalem Al-Quds is our red line, and the resistance won't allow such crimes to go unpunished. The Israeli occupation will pay the price if the eviction in Jerusalem Al-Quds continues.
As observers say, Palestinians are forcibly displaced from Sheikh Jarrah to make way for Jewish settlers. The Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah have been stepping up their campaign to save their families from eviction in recent weeks.
We are supporting our people in Jerusalem Al-Quds. The current displacement of Palestinians is totally illegal, as those are the real owners of this land. This move aims to demolish the Palestinian cause and expand the Jewish settlements. The Israeli occupation should be held accountable for these crimes.
Similar rallies have been held by Palestinians against the eviction across occupied lands.
People here stress they are all united in defending Palestinian rights, and they won't remain silent over the illegal displacement of Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah. Ruba Shabbat, Gaza.
And the grim news of the COVID-19 pandemic in India, the stronger and, day by day, it is getting stronger and grimmer. The record now stands at 414,000 new cases. The new figure has pushed India's total cases nearly 21.5 million, the second largest in the world. Bear that in mind. The country's COVID deaths have increased by almost 4,000 to over 234,000. The virus surged in big cities in the past few weeks. Now Indian authorities say it has spread to rural areas. The surge has also caused a health crisis. Hospitals are overwhelmed and struggling with severe shortages of medicines and oxygen supplies. Many states have imposed restrictions, but the government is reluctant to impose a national lockdown due to the economic fallout. And that's it with international news.
national leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, said, "Palestine is now the scene of humble bravery by an innocent generation and nation."
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness. And I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
The month of God. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. We are with you with another episode of the special series for Ramadan. The blessed month of Ramadan is the best opportunity for the growth of man's spiritual capacities. But before anything, the heart should be cleansed of pollutions, just like a gardener who first weeds and then sows the seeds. One of the evil characteristics and pollutions that should be avoided, especially in Ramadan, is anger. The anger that is not controlled is like the blaze of fire which will burn and destroy man. Anger has been likened to fire in most of the hadith, a fire that has originated from the Satan. That's why, if an angry person does not control his anger, it will destroy his body and spirit soon. Experts of ethics say that as soon as a person gets angry, his intellect will subside and he will utter words or show behaviors that are not normal. Uncontrolled anger can lead to violation of others' rights or break of family and marital bonds. A very important way for harnessing one's anger is patience. Patience is the key for repelling the Satan and gaining God's pleasure. As you know, fasting has a lot of effects, but one of the best ones is patience and tolerance. A patient and tolerant person usually does not decide or act recklessly and rashly. In continuation of discussing the injunctions of fasting, we touch upon the fast of parents that have been nullified. After the death of a father, if he has failed to fast some days or months, his elder son is obligated to fast instead of him, even if the father has failed to fast out of disobedience of God. As for the deceased mother, if she has failed to fast some days or months, it is not obligatory for the elder son to fast instead of her, although it is recommended. If the elder son has died, it is not obligatory on other sons to fast instead of their parents. If the elder son cannot fast due to disease or what else, he can hire someone to do the job. Dear listeners, we have fasted for 24 days. One of the most important states of servitude before God, especially during the blessed month of Ramadan, is a long prostration. Only God and His chosen servants, His messengers and imams, know what has been saved as a reward and what bounties will be bestowed upon those who perform long prostrations. On the last 10 nights of the blessed month of Ramadan, the faithful recite special supplications that have been taught by the infallible successors of the Prophet. So, let us recite together tonight's supplication. O disposer of the night as a garment and the day as a means of livelihood, and the earth as a cradle and the mountains as nails. O God, O dominant, O God, O all-compeller, O God, O hearing, O God, O near, O God, O answerer, O God, O God, O God, the best names, the loftiest parables and grandeur and bounties belong to You. I ask You to bless Muhammad and his progeny and place My name on this night among the successful, My spirit with the martyrs, and My good deed at the highest point of paradise, and My evil deeds forgiven. And I plead to You to grant me certitude which accompanies with My heart and faith, which takes that away from me, and make me satisfied with what You have distributed for me. and give us good in the world and good in the hereafter, and guard us against the punishment of burning fire, and give me a sustenance on this night, your remembrance and your gratitude, an enthusiasm toward you, and returning to you, and assisting me in what you have assisted Muhammad and progeny of Muhammad. Greetings to him and them.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ministry.
Iraqi Kurds, long accused of covert cozy ties with Zionist Israel, are watching on with amazement as Israel befriends allegedly hostile Arab countries. Normalization between Arab countries and Israel are changing geostrategic realities for them. After the occupation arrived in 1948 and as Arab hostility toward constant Israeli aggression intensified, the occupying entity tried to reach out to non-Arab communities in West Asia. It found an opening with Iraq's Kurds, who had a dream to separate from the central government in Baghdad. Israel then sought to provide military support to Kurds who were fighting Saddam Hussein's military campaigns in the north throughout the 1980s and the 1990s. In 2017, Israel backed a controversial independence referendum in northern Iraq, even as Erbil's allies, including the United States, opposed the vote. And now, as the Kurds watch several states normalizing with the region's historic foe Israel, they feel eager to take their relationship with Israeli intelligence and occupation forces out to the open, but they cannot do it on their own. They need Iraq to do it first, since Baghdad manages foreign policy. If an Israeli embassy opens in Baghdad tomorrow, the day after, an Israeli consulate will be open in Erbil. This is what KRG officials openly say. However, the Iraqi resistance has a different opinion. Regional media reported last week that an Israeli Mossad outpost came under attack in northern Iraq Tuesday, April 13 at night, and that a senior Israeli intelligence agent was killed while several other Mossad agents were wounded. Such incidents, along with the constant attacks against U.S. occupation forces in Erbil Airport, puts leaders of the KRG at a hot spot for not being able to keep their regions away from harm's way by engaging in unholy alliances with Iraq's main foes, Israel and the U.S. By supporting Kurdish separatism, Israel hopes to steer the region in a new direction and by extension encourage other ethnic and religious groups in the region to seek to emulate the Kurdish example. By deliberately seeking to dismantle the existing multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-religious nation states, Israel's quest to be recognized as a purely Jewish state would no longer be an aberration, or so it hopes. But we already know that it is not going to happen as long as the region's resistance is alive and capable. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. The Kurds are fond of saying that they have no friends but the mountains. Yet one entity has pushed for their separation from both Iraq and Syria over many decades, Israel. The relationship between the two has evolved to the point where Israel is the only voice in West Asia encouraging rather than decrying the Kurdistan's separation from Iraq. Netanyahu first publicly voiced support for an independent Kurdish state in June 2014 as the threat of Daesh was rising. However, that fantasy was blocked by the Iraqi resistance's elimination of Daesh, ridding the Kurdish Contras from Daesh threat. Yet Kurdish separatists still choose Israel over the resistance any day. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Laith Maarouf, political commentator. Thank you for being with us, Laith. Now, this is a very interesting topic here, specifically that the leaders of northern Iraq's Kurdistan regional government are always happy to receive Israeli support, given the international opposition to the Kurdish plans to disintegrate from Iraq. We have Kurdish leaders who could not openly celebrate their Israeli encouragement for fear of repercussions from the rest of Iraq, who link aspirations for Kurdish independence with the ideology of Zionism itself, which we have been seeing for the past 72 years. In what ways do you think the Kurdish separatists believe Israel can actually benefit their demands?
It's the same delusion that many before the Kurds have fallen into, and well, here we're talking about a small minority that is requesting the support of an imperialist against its own region. And we remember what happened to the indigenous tribes in Mexico when they sided, some of them, with the Spanish invaders against the Aztecs. And obviously the Spanish, as soon as we're done with the Aztecs, eliminated and ethnically cleansed those indigenous small tribes. And so it's a delusion for any person to side with imperialists against the people of his region, his or her region. And there's never been in history that this ended well. And it seems like the elite in the Kurdish people have not learned from history.
Well, the Kurdish regional government released an official statement last week on Wednesday denying certain reports that were present in the media, especially in the regional media, claiming that there were unknown forces that attacked a certain area, and which is a Mossad facility in the KRG, and it killed Israelis in northern Iraq. Now, at the same time, we have attacks on U.S. Bases all across Iraq, especially those who are stationed in Kurdistan, and now possible attacks against Mossad agents as well. What will be the result of such constant upheaval in northern Iraq that was once safer than actually Baghdad?
You see, the result will be continued fighting in the region. As long as the Kurds do not reconciliate with their surrounding, with their brothering and cousins in Iran, in Turkey, in the Arabic world, they will continue to be played by imperialist and apartheid Israel for the goals of not achieving them peace or stability or independence, but to undermine their brothers and neighbors. That's the ultimate goal that apartheid Israel is working on. That's the ultimate goal of the United States involvement in Iraq and Syria on the side of the Kurds. It is not for their betterment, it's for the detriment of everybody else around them, which means they will also, their house will be burning down with their surrounding. You know, you look at what's happening in North Iraq right now with the ethnic cleansing of Nineveh, of the Babylonian and Assyrian and Syriac and Arab peoples of that region, and the after the invasion of ISIS and the Wahhabi Contras, and how these Kurdish Contras themselves actually, instead of after the defeat of ISIS in that region, allowing the people of the indigenous populations of that region to come back, have taken it over and included it in their fake new independent province or area of Iraq. So we have now Kurds that are encroaching on the traditional lands of Semitic people, Assyrians, Babylonian, and Arab, and this will not end well.
Well, this sort of covert relationship between both the Kurdish side and the Israeli side began when the Ba'ath Party was still in power between 1968 and 1975. It was the most where they shared intel, and even Israel gave weapons to Kurdistan to fight off at that time Saddam Hussein. But we had Mustafa Barzani, the father of the current president of the KRG, Masoud Barzani. He was leading a rebellion against the Iraqi regime at that time. Now, Israeli security and intelligence agents help the Kurds with military assistance and with also arms. What benefits Israel from this relationship? Obviously, other than having a foot inside of Iraq, what can they benefit from a disintegrated region?
You see, the goal of apartheid Israel in the Western Asia and North Africa, one of their main goals since the creation of Zionism, is to cut off the rivers that feed the Arab people. We're here talking about the Euphrates and the Tigris and the Nile. And so you look at how the relationship between apartheid Israel, Turkey, and Ethiopia are very important into holding our people down. And, you know, and as we see right now in Egypt, the situation is deteriorating. You know, building this dam in Ethiopia will basically starve the people of Egypt. And here is the same thing happening in the Levant. The Turks built, 40-somewhat dams on the Euphrates and Tigris, and now the Kurds are coming to steal the lands that are the part of the Fertile Crescent that fed the Arab and the Semitic people for 40,000 years, you know, the land between the two rivers. So the aim here is to cut off the Arabic people from their ability to feed themselves, because that's one of the things that have kept the Arab people independent and able to resist imperialism and occupation for 20,000 years.
Well, given the past 10 years of war against terrorism, the region waged by the resistance against imperial powers who implanted hostile terrorists, Wahhabi-funded insurgents, and Westerns won in the region in total, especially in Iraq and in the areas controlled by the Kurds as well in northern Iraq, they suffered a lot until the Iraqi resistance led by both martyrs, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and Qasem Soleimani, went to help out, especially in Kirkuk, and rid the area of Daesh. Why is it so hard for the leaders of the KRG to accept that and to take a firm stance alongside the resistance, the Iraqi resistance, whom they share with the land, the sky, the nation, the pride?
Well, you know, unfortunate for the Kurdish people that they are cursed with such leadership that cannot even acknowledge a favor that was done to them and the saving of the Kurdish people in Iraq from these Wahhabi Contras that would have, you know, kidnapped and raped and all their children and women and killed their men if they were able to. So, we know that the Kurdish people is different than their elite, and their elite, unfortunately, are corrupted to the bone, where their care is not about protecting their people. It's about stealing as much money as possible through the looting of the Iraqi oil, now the Syrian oil also, and taking all the money that comes in from the West and the weapons. And so you look at what's happening in Kurdistan, Iraq, and the disparity between this political elite and the people on the ground is huge. And ultimately, the hope is that there will be new movements within the Kurdish people that will, push these elites out that are collaborating with imperialists.
Well, that remains to be seen as how the region is actually beginning to look like one which is waiting for fire to happen, or rather diplomacy to work throughout its sway. I want to thank you very much, Laith Maarouf, for being with us, political commentator in Beirut, to talk about the relationship between Israel and the Kurds of Iraq. Now, please stay tuned. Next, we will be talking about how the U.S. bases in Iraq are being shot one after the other.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Another military base hosting U.S. troops in Iraq was targeted with drones carrying explosives on Wednesday morning, ending any illusions that President Joe Biden's strike on Iraqi resistance soldiers inside Syria would deter such retaliatory attacks. Now, no casualties were reported in the attack on the airport in Erbil, which doubles as a base for U.S. troops. Now, before U.S. occupation troops shook off the Erbil attack, another one hit them on Friday in the Ain al-Assad base located in the Anbar governorate of western Iraq. U.S. occupation bases under heavy fire across Iraq in this following report.
Renewed drone attacks on U.S. targets in Iraq show that the Iraqi resistance is keen on ridding its nation from U.S. occupation, as U.S. pressure on the government in Baghdad is heaping, while Biden seeks leverage over the Iraqi official decision to see the U.S. leave their country once and for all. Iraq, scarred by decades of U.S. invasion, war, and Western-backed terrorism, has been a strategic location for the U.S. occupation to face off with its main foe, Iran, while making sure that the Iraqi popular choice of resistance be suppressed. The resumption of retaliatory attacks against U.S. occupation bases in Iraq shows that the Iraqi resistance are now abandoning de-escalation and seeking leverage over their rivals. It seems we're back to last year when, for several months in 2020, rockets rained down on American sites once a week or more. However, this time, not only in Anbar or Baghdad, but also in northern Iraq's Kurdistan region. A drone dropped explosives targeting U.S. occupation forces stationed at Erbil Airport in northern Iraq late on Wednesday, April 14, with no reports of casualties. However, a separate rocket attack killed a Turkish soldier at a military base nearby. It was the first known attack carried out by an unmanned aerial drone against U.S. forces in Erbil, amid a steady stream of rocket attacks on bases hosting U.S. occupation forces and their embassy in Baghdad that Washington blames on what it calls Iran-backed militias. The U.S. still cannot fathom the thought that Iraqis have every right to defend their land, especially after their tragic history of the American invasion, occupation, theft, and embedding Takfiri terrorism. Shortly before Wednesday's attack in Erbil, at least two rockets landed on a base to the west of the city that hosts Turkish forces, killing a Turkish soldier. Turkey also has troops in Iraq, both as part of a NATO contingent and a force that has attacked Kurdish separatist militants in the north. The Iraqi resistance had already expressed its opposition to the presence of the United States and Turkey and demand a full withdrawal of all foreign troops. But since all their words went unheard, they sought a louder form of expression, which definitely got the attention of all foreign occupation forces in Iraq.
have discussed this issue with us from Malmo is Firas Ali, political commentator. Thank you for being with us, Firas. Now, Iraqi resistance factions have upped the stakes with drone attacks against U.S. occupation forces inside of Iraq, a technique which is actually favored elsewhere in West Asia, and it seems to be affordable, yet very accurate and very effective. Are we at a crossroad for the U.S. illegal presence in Iraq, or maybe is this the storm before the actual big explosion that might happen?
The Iraqi resistance has chosen a very strategic offensive against the U.S. occupation. This choice is very accurate, and it doesn't risk Iraqi civilians' lives, neither through their own action or through rough and disproportionate reactions from the U.S. occupation. It's enough headache and damage for the civilian Iraqis that their lives are endangered by the U.S. missile defense, air missile defense system that they use around the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. Because usually, and it's very often actually, that shrapnels from that missile defense system drops down on civilian houses and damages it. The Iraqi resistance are therefore slowly choking the occupation, and this will make them bleed to death. A big explosion could occur if the Americans make a stupid mistake, like, for example, a bigger operation against the resistance. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't seem to be in the planning, at least not openly. I think the Americans would instead certainly prefer pushing Iraqi security forces against the resistance, and thus both having an internal fight and getting a pause from the attacks. Hopefully that won't happen.
Well, Firas, the U.S. has been planning to leave Baghdad, especially the green zone in Baghdad, and move north towards Erbil, away from the constant attacks by certain Iraqi groups that don't really name themselves or give a bit of a vague name for themselves. Yet they now find themselves being attacked, and people are following them up there and attacking them because they are not welcome in Iraq. What are the U.S. options when it comes to dealing with such specific drone attacks?
The Americans have only one option on. Let's make use of their favorite phrase, as we got to use it. Although it was a long time that they used it themselves, they used to say that all options are on the table. I think the Iraqi resistance are telling the Americans now, you have only one option on the table, and that's leaving Iraq. It doesn't matter where in Iraq you move, we will follow you there. If they don't leave Iraq, they will have to face the consequences. As you mentioned, we've seen in the region, and especially in the U.S.-backed Saudi war on Yemen, the U.S. defense system can't protect the kingdom from this kind of kamikaze drones, regardless of how expensive or the state of the art they are. This is actually making the Americans very irritated. Expensive defense system can't protect them against cheap but effective drones. Mm-hmm. And the use of drones are probably even safer for the Iraqi resistance than missiles, because they can send them from a distance without a bigger security setup, and they don't leave any traces.
Well, politically, the U.S. keeps poking at the Iraqi government, at Qadhimi's government, after every attack it faces inside of Iraqi territories, despite the fact that the Iraqi parliament considers the Iraqi resistance part of the Iraqi army since 2017. And so basically, when the U.S. targets the Iraqi resistance, it is basically targeting the Iraqi army itself. Where does Qadhimi's government stand on this very crucial matter?
Well, it seems that the interim government of Qadhimi are trying to balance between the occupation and the request of the parliament, which in fact is the wish of the Iraqi people. The government is actually engaged in a dialogue with the representatives of the United States of America in Iraq. They're talking about a withdrawal, but regardless, the Iraqi people are receiving mixed signals. The interim government says that the troops will leave, but spokesman for the occupation army says another thing. Sometimes they're talking about moving north to northern Iraq, and sometimes you can hear the Secretary General of NATO saying that they will replace the U.S. occupation. So it's hard to know who is the honest guy here in the room. But U.S. forces have decreased in Iraq, and that's a fact. But I don't think it's because of the dialogue. I think it's because of the security concerns they have amid the ongoing attacks.
Well,
but that's not enough.
But Firas, we have seen once again that the Iraqi file is pressing the Biden administration to make some sort of a firm stance towards its presence, its troops' presence inside of Iraq. It's illegal presence inside of Iraq. But Biden seems preoccupied these days, maybe with internal affairs or rather with Iranian JCPOA agreements that are going on or negotiations that are underway in Vienna as well. Can it be that the Iraqi events are also tied from an American point of view? They are tied to the Iranian deal as it is being propagated by the Western mainstream media that propagates everything that goes on in the White House.
I personally don't think that. It's true that Iran has evolved to a regional power, but it's far-fetched to attach everything in the region to the Iranian nuclear file. They say this every time there's an issue in the region, regardless of it, if it's about Lebanon, Yemen, or Iraq. But it's far from true. Unlike USA, Iran have allies which are connected to it ideologically, but they are very independent. Thus, they are acting with this independence, and that's why the Iraqi file is not connected at all to the nuclear file, the Iranian nuclear file. Mm-hmm. And the United States will sooner or later realize that they need to listen to the Iraqi people, and there's only one solution to the Iraqi file. Leave Iraq and period.
Well, there's one more file that the U.S. has not used, or maybe option that the U.S. has not used against the Iraqi people, which it had used against Yemen, against Syria, and against Lebanon, and that's sanctions. Do you think that might be one of the options on the table, and how do you think that would affect the internal economy and social fabric of Iraq?
Of course, that could be something that the United States will use as a B card, as a plan B. And if they use it, it will be a very it will be a disaster to the Iraqi economy and to the Iraqi nation, because Iraq has already problems with the economy, and the oil is not at that price that they used to have it before. So it could be the situation could become like it's in Syria if they imply the sanctions.
So do you think that is actually one of the options that would maybe bend the arms of the Iraqi government?
Definitely, because when the United States of America are not able to reach its goals with military way, they go to the sanctions.
They go to the sanctions, and that basically is what the Iraqi government maybe is afraid of, but at the same time, it shows that it is working against the maybe benefit and the demands of the Iraqi resistance. And that was the fear mainly when I ask a lot of my Iraqi friends about it internally. They say that they fear for the future of the Iraqi resistance. Do they have anything to really be afraid of?
I don't think that they need to be afraid of that, because before Ghazni came to power, the Iraqi prime minister and government of Mr. Abdel Mahdi, they traveled to China and they made an agreement with China to sell approximately 100,000 barrels of oil a day for Chinese investment in Iraq. And now Ghazni is giving about 200,000 barrels of oil in a day in the new deal he made with Jordan and Egypt. So Iraq, as with the case of Iran, they have a window to the east, to China, so they don't need to be afraid of the U.S. sanctions.
Mm-hmm. But yet the Iraqi government seems to be more than willing to abide by the demands of the Biden administration in fear that it might fall under certain sanctions or even more pressure. We still don't know what kind of pressure that the U.S. will be using against whether the Khatami administration or government in Iraq or the targets that it might hit the Iraqi resistance. But the Iraqi resistance has shown so far that it is not silent, it has a loud voice, it will target any occupying force all across Iraq until their land is liberated. I want to thank you very much, Firas Ali, for being with us from Malmo to talk about how the U.S. is being targeted inside of Iraq and what options do both sides have. Thank you for being with us. And please stay tuned, because next week we have more news right here on the Mideast Stream.
Greetings to resistance, greetings to the land of olives. Greetings to Palestine. Greetings to the land of pain and the oppressed. Greetings to the Holy Quds. Greetings to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the land of divine messengers. Greetings to resistance and to courage. Greetings to the tears of bereaved mothers. Greetings to the youth whose blood has been spilt. Greetings to the youth and children who stand against the cruel Zionists. For more than 7 decades, Palestine has been beleaguered, and Palestine has been occupied by the most cruel people on earth, the Zionists. But the countdown has already begun for the child-killing regime. This prophecy, the divine promise in the Holy Quran, where the Almighty says, "And we desired to show favor to those who were abased in the land, and to make them imams, and to make them the heirs." The father of the Islamic Revolution and founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, designated the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as the World Quds Day. Imam Khomeini asked the Islamic nations and governments to close ranks, to unite against the bloodthirsty and usurper Israeli regime. His call on the Islamic Ummah coincided with then-Egyptian President Anwar Sadat's betrayal of the Palestinian cause, through signing of the scandalous Camp David Accord with the fake